This is Fresh Air.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's now the time for the Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five MC.
We're coming.
While DJ Kool Herc is often credited as the father of hip-hop, Grandmaster Flash was one of the first DJs to make successful rap records and become a pioneer in the genre. In the 70s, he developed mixing and scratching techniques that became part of the basics of hip-hop. He spoke to Terry Gross in 2002.
Grandmaster Flash, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you for having me.
I'm interested in how you started mixing music. How you started using two turntables, or maybe even more than two. Was this something you started doing at home or in clubs as a DJ?
My love for vinyl and for the turntables probably started off when I was a toddler. You know, growing up at home, I was pretty fortunate to be around a montage of different types of music. Like my sisters, my bigger sisters were into like Tito Puente, Joe Patan. Like my father was into like Dizzy Gillespie, Miles Davis, Cab Calloway. My mother was like into Ella Fitzgerald, Lena Horne, stuff of that nature. So and I had a sister that was like into the Michael Jackson sound. So I was pretty fortunate to grow up listening to quite a bit of vinyl. And my love for it probably came about when I was old enough to sort of start looking into turntables and stuff of that nature. And that's probably, you know, although it was a negative experience, and when I say negative, meaning like I used to just sort of take apart electrical items in my mother's house, including turntables, just to figure out how they work and why they work. And my intention was to put it back together properly, but I just could not do it. But I just had this thing where I just had to know how the inside of a turntable worked, how the inside of a radio worked, and how my father's stereo. And that's probably where it really started, just like to have this undying interest of
Well, you basically started using turntables as if they were instruments. How did you start using turntables to change the music that you were listening to, as opposed to just playing the music?
Well, I think coming up, I watched a lot of DJs in my early teens, and watching the DJs of that particular time, they were playing the music. Like my influences, although they were great positive influences, I'm talking about DJ Kool Herc and Pete DJ Jones. These two DJs inspired me to do what I did, and they would play the music, and I just sort of felt like I can take the most exciting part of a record, which we call the break, and sort of extend that, because a lot of these songs that I was listening to were like obscure funk tunes where the break section was like maybe 10 seconds long. And from a frustrated point of view, I had this thought that if I can just come up with a way of just taking duplicate copies of the record with two turntables and a mixer, I can extend that five or 10 second part seamlessly and make it 10 minutes if I wanted to. And that's, you know, my thoughts manifested into creating an art form called the quick mix theory, which is actually taking a passage of music or two duplicate copies of vinyl and sort of moving the disc back and forth and repeating a section of the passage, you know, between duplicate copies of the record. That's where it started.
So you'd let like the 10 seconds play on one record and then switch to the other turntable, and meanwhile back up the first turntable to the beginning of that part of the record.
Exactly. That was called the clock theory, yeah.
Because you were putting the needle down on exactly the right part of the record with the rhythm that you wanted to hear, could you actually, you know, some people say that you were able to look at the grooves of a vinyl record and know exactly where the rhythm was that you wanted, that you could actually see it in the grooves.
Well, actually, you know, I was pretty decent at it, but it was my first student that I taught this quick mix theory to, Grand Wizard Theodore, was probably the best at that, and it was called needle drops. But what I came up with is what I call the clock theory, and the clock theory was where you would place the needles down on both copies of the vinyl, and when the ending of one was over, you would push in the next fader, but while the other one was playing, you would sort of spin the record back one or two revolutions to the top of that break, and then when the other one was over, you would push in the other. So it was like push, spin back, push, spin back. So I actually never, you know, this here, this made it an assured way of being able to get back to the beginning of the break section without actually having to pull the needle up. And what I would do is I would mark, like on the label, if it was like a record from a, if it was a 12-inch from Atlantic Records, and if the break beginning began at, let's just say, at the top of the A, I would sort of put like a magic marker right there. So that would be my clock of where I had to bring the record back to one or two revolutions back to re-arrive at the top of the break. And I would just sort of do this with two copies of records back and forth, back and forth. So picking up the needle, you know, was no longer an issue because that day wasn't definite. Because once you picked it up, you know, I could always get close to it, but it was never really, like, exact. And creating the clock theory, which all DJs use today now, where they mark the album at a certain point, is one of my contributions to the art of the DJ mix.
Why don't we listen to one of your now classic recordings, and this is The Adventures of Grandmaster Flash on the Wheels of Steel.
You say one for the trouble, two for the time. Come on, girls, let's rock that.
Bad Bad Freddy told me everybody slide. DJ spinning, I said, my. Flash is back, flash is back, flash is fast. Flash is cool, Francois, c'est pas, flash ain't all due.
You say one for the trouble, two for the time. Come on, girls, let's rock that.
That's Grandmaster Flash from the early 80s, one of his classic recordings, The Adventures of Grandmaster Flash on the Wheels of Steel. You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to hear that again, but this time, keep your microphone on and have you describe what you're doing as we listen to it. Here we go.
You see.
Punch face.
You see.
Spoon and G, Monster Jam. I let it go there.
Time. Come on, girls, let's rock that.
It's a Blondie here.
DJ spinning, I said, my. Flash is back.
Punch face. Punch face.
Flash is cool, Francois, c'est pas. Flash ain't all due.
You say one for the trouble.
Back to Spoonie again.
Time. Come on, girls, let's rock that.
Into Good Times, Chic. Into Apache on the Rub. Cutting it up, back in again. Punch face, Queen, another one bites the dust. In. Cutting it to rhythm. I'm using Good Times to rub the rhythm against Queen. Good Times by Chic.
That release is so nice, the way it synchronizes there.
Thank you. That's the whole key to it, you know. That's what my contribution is, keeping it on time. That was like the key.
Grandmaster, cut faster.
It's I punch bass.
Grandmaster.
From Freedom.
Cut faster. Grandmaster. Cut faster.
Cutting it up.
Grandmaster. Cut faster.
And I'm punch facing Good Times. Back to Good Times.
That's Grandmaster Flash walking us through his recording, The Adventures of Grandmaster Flash on the Wheels of Steel, recorded in 1981. You know, the way Good Times and Queen's Another One Bites the Dust, the way the rhythm of the two work together is really good. What made you think about putting those two together?
I think, they were two pretty big songs at that particular time, and they're almost in the same key. They're almost identical in the way that the bass is being played, and they worked really well in a club back in the days. So I felt, you know, putting it in the mix was like a real good idea, you know.
It was scratching something that you invented, or was that invented by one of the people who influenced you?
Well, actually, it was called cutting, and the whole thing was, like I said earlier in the interview, it's called the quick mix theory, and we called it cutting because it was actually taking a section of the rhythm and rearranging it. And this is something that I've created over 27 years ago. It's now called scratching, which is sort of just like one part. It's almost like, you know, saying to a boxer, he's boxing, but now we're going to call it right hook. You know, the right hook is only one area of a boxer's skill. And like the scratching is just one area of what this thing, you know, entails, you know.
Scratching, just for any of our listeners who don't know what scratching is when you're moving the record back and forth with the needle on it, and the sound of the needle scratching the record creates part of the rhythm track that you're going
right,
for.
Because of sort of sound.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So did you practice that a lot at home so you could just, like, really play these turntables as instruments and do exactly what you wanted on them?
Yeah, I sort of, I was looking for something because at this time, when I wanted to come up with this science, there was no point of reference, no blueprints around. So I was constantly at it, yes, but I was looking for something. And as I was looking for something, you know, I would run into obstacles. So that's when, you know, I had to start considering coming up with different techniques, which is like torque versus inertia for turntables, you know, because a lot of the turntables, like you can buy a turntable now that's suited for whatever you want. You want to do this, you can buy a turntable for that, or a mixer or a needle. But at this particular time in the 70s, this stuff didn't exist. So I had to like actually come up with science and terms and terminologies, you know. And with turntables, I came up with this thing called the torque factor. And the torque factor is based on, if from the state of inertia and you press that power switch, if that platter takes more than a turn to be up to speed, then the torque of that motor wasn't very good, you know. So in my search, you know, I went through countless amount of turntables. So I had to actually create the electrical items first before even coming up with the quick mix theory. And then I had to go look at needles, and then I learned that needles, you know, we're in two classifications, which is one is the elliptical and the other is the conical, you know. And conical, although it doesn't sound as good, it stood in the grooves better because it was shaped like a nail versus like an elliptical stylus that was built like a backwards J. But as soon as you would bring the disc back, it would fall out of the groove. So, you know, all these things had to come into play before I even was able to even start doing any cuttings, scratching, or whatever the case may be.
You must have been pretty obsessive at that time, taking apart turntables and shopping for just the right needle and, you know, designing all these variations on the technology that you were using so it could do what you needed it to do. You must have really been intense.
Well, I probably was more frustrated than anything because, I mean, so much stuff I had to buy, like a lot of it was trial and error, you know. Trying to get my hands on the right needle, you know, I had to go through countless needles, you know, trying to find the right turntable. I had to go through countless turntables and then finding the right mixer and then finding the right mixer, but then it didn't have a system where I can pre-hear the music in my head, so I had to create something called the peekaboo system. So I had to like actually jury-rig these things, you know. In my frustration, my frustration kept me more, it fueled the fire to me just staying at this, and you know, throwing away my teenage years, you know, where you know, your teenage years is when you know you're feeling your oats and you want to go hang out with the girls and you want to go to the parties and stuff. I think I probably lived either like in the junkyards going through like abandoned stereo equipment or going through abandoned cars and taking out the speakers and the radios and stuff of that nature. I probably lived in my room more so, you know, just looking for something, you know.
Did you have the money? Did you have the money to buy a lot of stereo equipment?
No. That's why I had to go into backyards and look for stuff and sort of like go through abandoned cars or ask people, you know, that might have been throwing away stuff. Just, you know, just so that I can just basically have these things. But at this point in time, I still didn't know what these internal parts was. So while I was tearing up all the stuff inside my mother's house and became like public enemy number one with my sisters and stuff, my mother decided to send me to school.
What kind of school?
Samuel Gompers Vocational and Technical High School. And that's where I started to understand, like, what is a resistor? What is a capacitor? What is AC versus DC? What is a transformer? What's a push-pull circuit? What's a diode rectifier? What's a transistorized versus tubes? And what's an ohmmeter? And what's an oscilloscope? And what's a wave? And, you know, I started, like, actually understanding as I was, you know, not. So now when I tore into something, I sort of had somewhat of an idea of what it is and what it did. So all these things helped me to jury rig and put together, you know, this peekaboo system to a mix that I didn't have it, and to figure out, you know, how turntables work and how that works. So it kind of helped me to put together the system so that I can start on getting this concept out of my head that just kept, you know, it just kept staying in my head, so to speak.
Let's get back to your new CD, the Grandmaster Flash Essential Mix Classic Edition. One of the things on here is Blondie's Rapture, and that's one of the songs that you sample in The Adventures of Grandmaster Flash on the Wheels of Steel, because she mentions you in the song.
Yes.
How did you find out about each other? Do you know?
Well, actually, how it happened was when I was maybe 10 years before I recorded making records, there was a gentleman by the name of Fab Five Freddy who used to come to my parties, but he also had this incredible connection with, like, the whites and the different races of people downtown in the village. So back in the days, he was, like, hanging downtown in the village, but he would come up to the Bronx and party with Flash, Herc, and Bam. And he was sort of like our town crier also. He would go downtown and say, listen, there's this guy's uptown. You guys, you know, this guy named Flash, you got to come, you know, come check him, you know. And he would say to me, I'm going to bring one of my good friends up, Deborah, Harry. And everybody at that time knew that name. And I was basically on some yeah, right, whatever. And then surprisingly enough, a couple of weeks later, he brought this woman to my party, and she watched me play, and she was extremely happy with the way that I played, and said that she was going to write a song about me. I took it as a grain of salt, didn't really believe it until maybe 2 or 3 months later, and she did it. And she opened up so many doors for hip-hop by doing that.
Well, why don't we close with Rapture, which is on your new mix CD. And Grandmaster Flash, thanks so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Grandmaster Flash spoke to Terry Gross in 2002. This is Fresh Air.